Well, a very good Thursday. Oh, some sun just came out. Just as I started to speak, a little sun. Into everyone's life, a little sun may shine. That's kind of like what the expression is. But it is going to be a relentlessly positive radio day here because you've now tuned in to Focus. Here with you Monday through Friday from noon till 2 on WJR, whether you're listening at 760 on the AM dial, streaming us, or coming back and listening later, podcasting us, all at WJR.com or the free WJR app. And then, of course, the Facebook and YouTube pages, live stream. People are kind of just catching on to that. But you can watch us if you're in a position, and I hope that you will and that that audience will grow along with everyone else. Right after the Daily Dose of Dietz, All Talk with Kevin Dietz, and just before JR Afternoon with Ryan Armani. We're happy to be here as you're on your way to making each and every day count. Each day is a gift, and I do thank you for choosing to be an important part of the best and brightest audience in all of radio. That happens anytime you tune in to WJR, any time of day or night. Now, Mr. Parsons, was I not supposed to notice that everything is reversed on the screen now that if anyone's watching? Is that why you don't have the nameplates up?
Yeah, the reason I don't have the nameplates up is because you get that big chunk and then you only see the top half of Danielle's face. She looks like that neighbor from Home Improvement where you don't see the rest. Right. So just trying something different.
I thought you could just tilt the camera and make that change.
So the one that she's using...
Oh, look, she's tilting it all over the place.
It's not as adjustable as mine, so...
Oh, okay.
So, you know, I figured so that everyone knows that Danielle has a whole head, that I would just stop using the graphic.
She does have a whole head.
I don't need to have a whole head. They don't need to know that.
No, I think they do. I mean, there's not a lot of people watching yet because we just started this. But, you know, anyway, unfortunately, some sad news. This name is a big name in broadcasting in Detroit for years. And certainly I've known it. You've known it. We worked with various members. A guy go back to one of their family members back to University of Michigan a million years ago. But we've just learned that Brian Pastoria has passed away. And I know... you have some of the information there.
Yes.
I'm not sure what you have.
Yeah, so Brian Pastoria, number one, he's the brother of Mark Pastoria, who works with our friends over at Startup Nation, and you've probably heard him on Startup Nation. He produces the Business Beat with Jeff Sloan. And Brian Pastoria and Mark Pastoria, they had pretty big music careers back in the 80s. They were kind of like... the first rock act to kind of come through in the 80s. They were in a band called Adrenaline and DC Drive. And then after their band days were over, they opened a very legendary...
high-tech, legendary studio.
Harmony Park in downtown Detroit, and they've recorded everyone. I think they've won a Grammy with Aretha Franklin.
I think you're right.
So, yeah, I mean, big in broadcasting, really big in the music scene. And
nice people. And I wasn't aware of him being ill. That doesn't mean he wasn't ill, but I didn't hear anything.
Yeah, I didn't hear anything either. I didn't know Brian well. I know Mark pretty well. But Brian and I were Facebook friends, and he was very active on Facebook up until the day before we heard he passed. So, yeah, I don't know if this was... sudden. I don't know if he was sick for a while, but
we send out our condolences.
Yeah.
Very sad.
Either way, it's tragic, whether it was sudden or not.
He wasn't very old.
68.
Oh, boy.
Way too young.
Way too young. These days, we used to accept men dying at 68. That's when men died, between 63 and 70 or whatever. There was that dark window, but not anymore. Let's not let that happen. But
right.
Again, our thoughts and prayers to the entire family. We go to some good news to counterbalance it with our relentless positive radio. I called and wished Joe Vicari a happy birthday, but in my calendar now, it's there twice, yesterday and today. So I have no idea which one is right. But so Joe Vicari, Rosalie, the whole family, and, you know, of course, our own management person here who's been with the station for years, Teresa Vicari Ahe. And I always said, what a perfect name for somebody attached to WJR because
right.
of the Vicaris and Andiamos and all of that. And then the Ahes, as in the fabulous jewelry store. So we wish Joe a happy birthday over these 2 days. I'm not sure what it is. Leszek Spiewak, a dear friend I've told you about who came here from Poland legally many years ago, married Anya and had two beautiful children, Karolina and Tony. And I told you about Karolina getting offers from all these different colleges. These kids work so hard.
Yeah, I remember this.
And she got a full ride to Harvard.
Wow.
Which is a very big deal. Coming to this country, not having, Leszek didn't know English. He learned it. Same with Anya. But God bless him. Leszek is celebrating. Leszek Spiewak. And he's now the commercial property manager for Huron Gastro. Huron Gastro, I wasn't familiar with them, but your property manager is celebrating his birthday, so wish him a happy birthday.
That
also
is the American dream.
It is.
Yeah.
That is the American dream, and I wanted to grab all these kids who were protesting over the last couple of years, shake them and say, you have no idea how you have it made, because it's all been handed to you. These are people nothing was handed to. They understood the beautiful, great country they came to, and they worked hard and took advantage of the advantages that they had by coming to this country and becoming Americans. Now, we all know Link Bessert. I used to talk about him all the time, the former professional hockey player. He's big, he's handsome, he's bald. He's big and he's bald. I once bought him a trimmer for his head. Anyway,
what, as a joke?
No, it wasn't a joke.
Oh, to maintain
no,
the smoothness.
I saw it, and it looked like it was a really good one that would maintain the smoothness and not hurt.
Oh, okay, like a razor. I thought you meant like hair clippers, like
no, like an electric.
Okay, got it.
Because he's over the last 30 plus years, he's done a lot of great things for me. I've tried to do good things for him. Lincoln Stephanie Bessert and their little girl Zoe turned 24 yesterday. See, if you haven't gone through it, if you're a parent, you understand exactly what I'm talking about. You turn around and they go from being 3 years old to asking to borrow the keys to the car.
To running for Congress.
Or to running for Congress. She turned 24 yesterday. She works for Stryker, the medical equipment company in Kansas City. God bless her. She works really hard. She's been through a lot. From playing soccer in college. That's a whole other long story. All right, did we cover most of the things? I think we did.
I think we'll clean up everything else in the 1 o'clock here.
We have so much to talk about today. There is so much going on. I did anybody go see the vice president in town? We were working. But he says, double down on Trump. Vance urges in Michigan, rough road for gas prices in coming weeks, just temporary. The Veep contends. That's Craig, our friend Craig Mauger from the award-winning Detroit News. So MSU, U of M ready to dance, and a thriving brewery looks to expand, and then human trafficking fight puts the target on the Johns, finally.
Good.
A lot going on. We've got it all for you with Relentless Positive Radio with the team, Mike Parsons, Danielle Mason, and Rich Luzinski. So we're glad we're all together here. Paul W. Smith in focus on WJR. All righty, let's check in with the editorial page editor for the Detroit News and co-author of the very important book, The Civility Book, A Guide to Building Bridges Across the Political Divide. Nolan teaming up with his friend Stephen Henderson and with Lynn Golodner. We had a vice president in town. I remember when a vice president or president would come into town, didn't matter what party you were for or with or what party they were with, people showed up. Elected officials showed up because it was a big deal having the president or the vice president of the United States coming to town. That's not the case anymore. Nolan Finney, you go back 50 years. You do remember when that was the case, right, Nolan?
Yeah, but, familiarity breeds contempt. I think Paul, and they're in and out so often now. It's become so much easier and so much part of their routine to stay on the road, particularly in battleground states like Michigan, key states. You know, the campaign never ends.
Well, he is asking us in his speech, his presentation, to, at first I didn't get it, double down on Trump, Vance urges in Michigan, meaning show more of your support for the president? Is that what he means?
Yes. I mean, how about earn more support? They've got a real problem here, a communication problem. They're sending out conflicted messages, and I can't tell you where we stand in Iran. So what are you asking me to double down on? You've got Pete Hegseth out there saying we've destroyed their military capability, and yet they still control the Straits of Hormuz, and you still got bombs and missiles flying out of Iran all over that region. That doesn't sound like a military that's been destroyed. But if it has been, I'd welcome it and wonder when the hell we're getting out.
Well, I have to tell you, sadly, and I'll take all kinds of heat for this, but it's just, I got to tell you what I feel and what I believe, and what I feel and what I believe right now is they talk too much. They just talk too much, and they say too many things. My God, we had the president saying we won the war in the first day. Well, if that's the case, get the hell out of there. It's obviously not the case. And frankly, they've got to do some things that might not be very attractive to the world if they're going to, quote unquote, win and be done with it. Because it doesn't look like it's anywhere close to done. And every time we're told everything's knocked out, they don't have anything left. They bombed six or seven other places.
Right. And, you know, a two-week war is already now a month long. That can quickly extend into 6 months. And if it does, I think Republicans have lost all chance of prevailing in the midterm election.
And frankly, isn't it sad and unfortunate that you're absolutely right, Nolan Finley, it does come down to that. Here we are waging a war or whatever they call it now, and it comes down to, well, can they get this done in time to help them for the midterm elections? Come on. It should be a little bigger than that, but it isn't.
No, it's all about partisanship now and who's going to control Congress, who's going to hold the power. This has nothing, very little that happens in Washington has anything to do with making your life better or my life better. It's all about, what do we have to do to get reelected this fall?
Which, by the way, was supposed to be why they were elected in the first place, to protect our way of living and improve our way of living. But it doesn't seem to be, it does not seem to be top on anyone's mind right now.
And I wish we could see, you know, I could see in, you know, from my own view, how this thing works out in Iran. How does it come to an end? And it's hard for me to see the mission being accomplished without ground troops, and that means a whole lot more American casualties. And I, for one, don't want to sacrifice any of my children or grandchildren to this cause.
Yeah. Well, we'll stay on top of it. I mean, it's unavoidable. It is the news, and we continue with that. There's another story out there that's interesting, and that is, of course, the hearings now for Mark Wayne Mullen. And what can you tell us about that?
Well, it seems, you know, that's interesting because, you know, they asked Mullen what he would do different, and he seems to have laid out a whole new mission for ICE and that agency. He, from his description, he sees it as sort of a collection agency. Let police agencies, law enforcement, round up and arrest the illegals, and they'll take care of transporting and importing. And that seems to be a more rational division of duty if you can get the law enforcement agencies to do it. But you know, ICE has come under a lot of fire, and Border Patrol come under a lot of fire because of their law enforcement role and some of the tactics that's been deployed. So you move them out of that, you might take away the irritation point.
So what do you say about the I guess I'd have to say, the hard line role that our Democrat United States Senator Gary Peters of Michigan, who's not running for re-election, or Elissa Slotkin, who has shown really severe signs of Trump derangement syndrome in many ways in other stories, maybe not on this one. What do you say of their reaction in grilling Mark Wayne Mullen?
You know, it's performative. It's all a show, and particularly for her, you know, she wants to look like the little general down there in Washington. My bigger concern with them is they need to put their support and their votes behind funding the Department of Homeland Security. It is unconscionable that Democrats are holding up funding for an agency like that, particularly Michigan Democrats, after we've had that terror attack last week that could have been an absolute tragedy.
Well, that same day, you noted, that same day, Elissa Slotkin is going doing press conferences or making press statements saying, oh, we need to get them funded, whatever. The same day it happened, she had voted no in a test vote.
And twist arms to get your colleagues to vote for it. Airports are going to start shutting down. What do you think that's going to do to our economy? And, you know, they have lost this battle. And they need to, you know, cast their votes in favor of funding these essential agencies.
You know, you can have your Trump derangement syndrome, but you're not hurting Trump as much as you think you are, but you're hurting the people you've been elected to represent. That's just unconscionable. And I sure hope the people are paying attention and not being waylaid by the lies going both ways. But I appreciate you always. It was great seeing you celebrating your 50th anniversary at the Detroit News. Keep up the good work, my friend.
Thanks, man. That was a good party Tuesday.
Yeah, that was a good St. Patrick's Day party. My goodness, we've done it now 30 years. Maybe over 30 years. The whole party's been going on 40 or 41 years when Joe started it. He did it for about 10 years, and we picked it up and have done it for now the next 30 plus years. So I'm glad you were there. Hope we can do it again next year. Nolan Finley, editorial page editor for the Detroit News, co-author of the Civility Book, A Guide to Building Bridges Across the Political Divide, by Nolan and Stephen Henderson with Lynn Gollidner. We continue at 12:30 on WJR. You know, the St. Patrick's Day thing is very busy. I do not believe that Sheriff Mike Bouchard was there, Oakland County Sheriff, but I know for a fact Captain Mike Bouchard, his son, was there. And I remember that Captain Bouchard joined his dad. They were at lunch when the call came in at Temple Israel. And I'm watching television, I go, my gosh, there's Captain Mike Bouchard just back from the military running for office, and he's there because he's still an auxiliary sheriff deputy. And he had his badge on and his gun, and he was there to help Temple Israel and all the people in the surrounding areas. Mike, you and Pam must be so very proud of this son of yours. I know you're proud of your kids, period, but you must be so proud of Captain Mike.
Yeah, I'm super proud of him. I did yell at him a little bit. I said, you know, where was your vest, man? But outside of that, quite proud of him. You know, both our boys were there. But, that, you know, I mean, there were 605 law enforcement there. So it wasn't about my kids or anybody. It was about everybody. It was about the security team. It was about the teachers and staff that did an amazing job and did the right thing. How the families, you know, came together and are supporting the community that's so terribly affected by this very horrific attack. And, you know, so many people pitched in, and it was a miracle, quite frankly, that the only person killed in this was the person that wanted to bring hate and death to that temple.
And he finally did the ultimate hate and death to himself. At our St. Patrick's Day party, I met for the first time the head of the FBI in Detroit, Jennifer Runyon, special agent in charge of the Detroit field office. She was very impressive on television and even more impressive in person. And it wasn't she was not the one who told me this, but somebody said to me in one of these many interviews I've done that somebody actually said something like, "Oh, there are too many people that responded. There were too many cars." How can people in the middle of something that no one actually knows exactly what's happening, but there are kids at risk, how could people not respond and react the way you did? It's just astonishing to me that people can find things to complain about all the time.
Oh, it's unbelievable. I mean, the complaints and posts that people put up and, you know, I mean, we've got too many people in this world that are empowered to be critics about stuff they know nothing about and just want to sit in their basement and be angry. And so they take it out on people in a community that was traumatized. We're going to send everything that we need to send to any situation to protect people, period. And if you don't like that there are a lot of cops there, sorry.
That's just incredible. Change the channel, period. Incredible, incredible, incredible to me. You, in fact, today, right at the end of our show, 2 p.m., Oakland County Sheriff Michael Bouchard is holding a news conference to discuss the attack on Temple Israel and how the community moves forward. You're going to be joined at this news conference by faith leaders and representatives from area law enforcement. Tell us about it.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to talk not only about the attack, but how somehow in this upside-down world, we've normalized anti-Semitism. And it's unacceptable on every level. You know, any attack on any person or religion is absolutely abhorrent and terrible and unacceptable, period. But the anti-Semitism and the attacks on the Jewish community have skyrocketed. And we have to collectively, individually, and everyone call it out for what it is and not accept it in private conversations or in public or posts on social media. It is terrible. And, you know, so that's part of the focus of this is we need to collectively be much more forceful. I mean, the fact that kids going to colleges were fearful to be Jewish because of how they may be attacked or berated or even physically assaulted around the country, how did that become even something that would happen in this country?
Well, at places that are supposed to be bastions of higher education, that's what we call them, to be so misinformed and misled by misinformed and misleading professors, but then to see it, to discover it, and allow it to continue on college campuses is mind-blowing. The only way that most of these colleges cleaned up their act is when President Trump threatened to take away their money. That's like unbelievable to me.
And that's what we have to, as a society, say, okay, this is crazy. We have to all stand together against this. If this was any other group, would we be allowing this? Would we be tolerating this? And I think in many ways the answer is no. You know, and again, unequivocally, it's not acceptable against any person, group, or religion.
Absolutely.
But it has shown its ugly head in such a dramatic way against the Jewish community that, no, stop, enough.
All right, 2 o'clock today, press conference for those interested. It'll be at the sheriff's office on North Telegraph Road, discussing the attack on Temple Israel, and most importantly, how the community moves forward. We appreciate that. Now, a little sidebar. I know, because of who you are and the reputation you have countrywide, you had to be involved in Vice President J.D. Vance's security detail yesterday. I'm assuming you were.
1,000%. Yeah.
I mean, they wouldn't be able to come into town without asking you. So what was that like?
Yeah, anytime you have a presidential or a vice presidential visit or during the campaigns, you know, we very much were involved in protecting Vice President Harris and, you know, Governor Walz, as well as, you know, Vice President now J.D. Vance, as well as now President Trump. So, you know, we protect everybody and anybody that comes to town, and it is a heavy lift because given the threat matrix that we're facing, you know, against frankly, anybody in elected office, we have to take things seriously and do a lot of things. So we were very consumed by that visit
and making sure
it was safe.
You've been on security details for a number of presidents because you've been around for a long time. Could you actually,
yes.
You must have actually sensed and felt how much stronger the security detail is because the threat is stronger than ever, it seems.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I mean, there's so many, and the threat matrix is different, you know. You've got the possibility of that threat coming from different things. I mean, you saw the attempt assassination on President Trump in Pennsylvania utilized a drone for pre-op surveillance. And so, you know, you've got to look at this as a multi-layered threat kind of situation.
Hey, you're also offering free security courses, by the way, to houses of worship, all of them. What do we need to know about that, or are you going to tell us that at the press conference?
Yeah, so they can go sign up on our social media pages. We're trying to get a handle of how many want to come, and that will inform us on how big a venue we need. It's going to be at night in the very near future, and we want every house of worship in Oakland County to have first bids, but if we have space, we'll accept them from outside of Oakland County. So that they come and they get the basics. I mean, everyone, sadly, we have to think about it. What kinds of things do you need to have in place? You need to have a plan in place, a safety and security plan. We suggest you should have a safety and security team that implements that plan and is in place during, you know, any activities at your facility. And so we kind of walk through all of that, give you a template and explain that and answer questions for you. We did it actually in December. And obviously, after this terrible incident, we've got a lot of interest. I think in the first 26 hours, we had like 50 already sign up.
All right. So this you say on the Oakland County Sheriff Department's social media pages, is that how you put it?
Yeah, Facebook, Twitter, you know, there's links on there to Google for a Google sign up doc. Just sign up, say who wants to come and how many are coming. And that way we're getting a handle on numbers and groups, and then we'll answer back with where and when it's going to be in the very, very near future.
And you'll come on the air and let us know. You'll remind us.
100%.
Offering free security courses to all houses of worship and all houses of worship. And I would say even more than that, but I don't want to broaden this too much, but schools, everybody has got to
have a plan.
Yeah,
we've done it for everybody.
Right.
Yep.
I know. Keep up the good work, Sheriff. God bless you.
Thank you, my friend. You have a great day.
You do the same. We're very lucky to have Oakland County Sheriff Michael Bouchard as we continue in focus on WJR. Well, David Shepherdson covers transportation, autos, and aviation for Reuters. He was with the Detroit News and did a great job there, too. He has written about, like we need one other thing to worry about, but we do need to know that the U.S. Postal Service is telling us they could run out of money as soon as October. David, bad news, but let us know what all this means.
Well, I do write about some positive things. It's not all gloom and doom, but yes. So I've been covering the Postal Service since 2020, and if you remember several years ago, they got about a $50 billion bailout from Congress, mostly about helping them deal with pension obligations and funding requirements, a lot of sort of very arcane financial issues. But really, in a nutshell, the problem is the Postal Service has seen a tremendous drop in mail. So it's down to the same level of the late 1960s. And the Postmaster General told Congress they've lost about 110 billion pieces of mail. So it went from roughly 210 billion to 110 billion per year. And if you look at the current stamp price, 78 cents, that translates into a loss of like $80 to $85 billion a year. So, I mean, it's hard for any business, imagine, to lose that much revenue. So they have a lot less revenue, although their package business has gone up. But they still got to deliver to all 170 million U.S. addresses 6 days a week at the same time that Amazon is going to move a bunch, if not all of its package delivery away from the Postal Service. So they've got a lot of financial issues and tough choices to make, and Congress is going to have to decide how are we going to fix this problem when they're losing roughly $10 billion a year.
Well, and when they change the stamp price from 78 cents to a dollar or more, they're going to lose more business.
Right. Certainly, especially from big users, right? I mean, I think he makes the argument that it would be a significant percentage basis. But if you use, you know, a couple hundred stamps a year, it's not a huge amount of money. But there's a lot of pushback in Congress to raising stamp prices. Obviously, inflation has been a big issue for the last 5 years. And that's another inflationary point if you raise those prices. But they would argue around the world, stamp prices are averaging like $2 in most developed countries. And so going from 78 cents to 95 cents, you know, while a significant percentage basis would still leave the U.S. much lower than other countries.
David, about 30 seconds. How is it that FedEx and UPS continue to be profitable companies?
I think because they can pick just profitable deliveries. They don't have to deliver to all 170 million addresses. Like 50% of postal routes don't make money. If they had the option, if it was strictly a free market, they wouldn't deliver to a lot of places in rural areas, which
very
would be
good point.
Obviously terrible. Yeah.
Very good point. David Shepherdson, he covers it, transportation, autos, aviation for Reuters. We miss him at the Detroit News, but are happy that he's still around in a bigger venue at Reuters. Thank you, David.
Thank you, Paul W.
We continue in Focus, Paul W. Smith, right here on WJR. Welcome into hour number two of this Thursday edition, March 19th, of Focus. Relentless positive radio with the team, the team, the team. Mike Parsons, our executive producer, Danielle Mason running all the controls, the queen of the switches, and Rich Luzinski keeping track of our WJR traffic and weather first. And there's a whole team behind us, too, and we appreciate all the work the unsung heroes do every day for us to be able to do our job. You can stream us, or you can come back and podcast us if you miss out. All of that's easily done at WJR.com or the free WJR app. And right now, in fact, on Facebook and YouTube pages, we are live streaming, something we just started doing not too long ago. And you'll see, if you are watching behind Danielle, somebody's salad and, I don't know, whatever it is, food always looks good at this hour.
That's my salad.
Oh, well, good for you.
Yeah, you're Danielle very stuck to the board for hours, so that's where she eats. Yeah.
It's astonishing how long she's stuck to the board, so to speak, or that Rich Luzinski is doing his reports. I'll listen later in the day during Mitch, or I'm not sure if he's there at Sports Wrap that late, too, but, I mean, he's here all the time. Everybody is, including you, Mike Parsons. And I'm the one that just gets to dance in while you're on your way to making each and every day count, because each day is a gift. And I do thank you for choosing to be an important part of the best and brightest audience in all of radio. And that's when you listen anytime.
Paul, you know you and I are never off the clock completely.
Well, that is the truth. We are not ever off the clock. Even when we're getting our daily dose of Dietz, All Talk with Kevin Dietz before us and after us with JR Afternoon with Ryan Ermani. What a great broadcasting sandwich we have here. And then, of course, there's Mitch, and then there's Sports Wrap. It's just great programming. You know, we used to have some people on the air, sir, that their show was the only one that really gave you all the information. I would never say that. All of our shows are great. All of them give you great information. And you're doing well and being a part of the best and brightest audience in all of radio whenever you listen to WJR. We all work hard to make sure that's the case. Lincoln Stephanie Bessert's little girl Zoe turned 24 yesterday, works for Stryker in Kansas City. My God, she was 3 years old just 15 minutes ago, and all parents understand what I'm talking about. Joe Vaccari was not 3 years old 15 minutes ago, but he is celebrating a birthday either yesterday or today, and I'm sure Rosalie is celebrating both days with him. And the daughter is a part of our WJR team and has been for years, Teresa Vaccari Ahe. Perfect name for somebody to work at WJR.
Her middle name is Mary Grove, I believe.
Yeah, it should be Mary Grove. Let's add it all in there. My dear friend Leszek Spiewak, who I've talked about on the air before, who is the commercial property manager for Huron Gastro, is celebrating his birthday, and he's the guy who had these two children. He came from Poland legally, Anya and Karolina. No, Anya's the mom. Karolina and Tony are the kids, and it's Karolina who got a full-ride scholarship to Harvard. I mean, talk about the American dream. God bless them. I told you I wanted to shake those kids that were doing all the trouble at colleges over the last couple of years. Meanwhile, thank you to Dr. Basha. You know, I drove by that thing for years, not even knowing what it meant. Basha Open MRI on Woodward Avenue. Now we should probably get a membership because I've had to get MRIs there, and it was a great experience. And Kim is getting an MRI there today, or maybe she already did. Jamie took her. Dr. Basha, keep up the good work and your team over there, too, at Basha Open MRI. How's this for a story? This is so bizarre. I'm just bringing it up because I just saw it on my rundown here. You have a newly elected Idaho mayor, Rick Hogebohm.
It's a heck of a name.
It's a heck of a name, but it gets worse because he'll be remembered for this. He was at a regional town hall in Eagle, Idaho, I guess. And he collapsed during the public meeting, and he died.
Wow.
So we don't know the family. We don't know him, but we keep the loved ones and family in our prayers. No nature of what caused the medical event is known. I'm looking at a picture of him. He doesn't look very old.
Huh. I mean, imagine being at that town hall and just how confusing everything must have been.
It just had to be horrible.
Yeah.
Here's another study. Global study finds Instagram worse for mental health than WhatsApp.
You know,
I don't get that.
Me either, because a friend of mine who's like taking a social media break, he reactivated his Twitter or his X, but not his Instagram. And I find Instagram to be kind of the least combative of all the all the social media.
Well, it's the only one I do because it's so simple. Paul yeah. W. Smithson, my Instagram, and it isn't combative. It doesn't do anything. And WhatsApp doesn't do anything either. The way I use it,
isn't just messaging.
That what we use for long-distance phone calls in other countries?
Yeah, exactly. Like if you're going out of country, actually that's how I first talked to Daron, who's coming up at 1:45. You text on WhatsApp because you don't have to pay the package for going overseas. But maybe Instagram's bad for your mental health because you got all these influencers, you know, with perfect bodies and making videos of going to exotic places, and maybe you feel bad about your life in comparison. I don't know.
There's no question that, because I don't participate in all the others, but with Instagram, it's just real easy to keep going.
Right.
You know, you go one to another, and, you know, and Kim will say, sweetheart, why don't we go to bed?
Right. Right. You know what?
Well, I'm finding out what's happening in the world.
You know what? I'm like that with the reels. I'm like that on TikTok. Sometimes I'm just scrolling mindlessly, and then I'm like, you know what? I need to stop because I haven't stopped to actually watch a video. I'm just swiping for swiping's sake.
Right. So what is this? Let me see here if I can get this without it. White House offers concessions on body cameras in bid to end DHS shutdown. I thought that was agreed upon already, and it makes sense. And they were going to do body cameras on the ICE people. What I don't understand.
Yeah, and you know what? When I saw that headline yesterday, I thought it would have become a bigger story. But yeah, they're going to expand the use of body cams. We didn't really see body cams in the two people who died in Minneapolis, right? It was all cell phone video, but. And also, I saw something about how they would pull back operations at like sensitive areas, like churches and schools and hospitals. Where I don't know if they've been going into those places, but that's part of the deal too. So
I will follow the law, Bondi says after Dems storm out of Epstein files briefing. Senate votes to take up Trump's voting bill to guarantee midterms. Is that the America?
Yeah, the Save Act.
Save America thing. What's the story on the? What are you going to say or do? But the civil rights leader Cesar Chavez.
Yeah.
Chavez accused of sexual abuse. I mean, really bad.
Right.
And that didn't even come from the Epstein files.
Right. Yeah. It was the first accusation was from a woman that kind of worked side by side with them in the labor movement. And then there were a couple of other women who say that he assaulted them very, very young. So there's a lot of schools and a lot of streets with his name on it, and a lot of people are rethinking that and thinking of name changes.
Unbelievable. And what's this story? I can't see that bring it up. Michigan Democrats request probe into Epstein's ties to Interlaken? What?
Yeah.
What the hell?
Yeah, he spent some time at Interlaken. And I guess they're just in the interest of transparency, they're looking into it. I didn't read too deeply into the article, but I know that Interlaken has been associated with the files. I'm not sure what he's accused of doing there, though.
That's the first I've heard that. That is the first I've heard that, and I don't know what the story is. Or end up on a positive plus note with relentless positive radio, best we can under the circumstances of the news. We don't make the news. We just oftentimes talk about it or try to ignore it. But anyway, Oakland Hills announces $100 million clubhouse opening date 4 years after the fire.
Wow, it's been four years already.
I can't believe that's been 4 years.
I know.
Huh?
Feels like yesterday.
Yes, indeed, it does feel like yesterday. And I've been out there a few times emceeing events out in the tent they have. Is the opening in May? I read it, but now I can't find it.
Yeah, I believe it's sometime this spring.
Well, I hope that they have us broadcast out there, because we certainly broadcast out there when it was rubble and charred wood. And I can't wait to see the job they've done and how they've spent their $100 million, which is good for them because Oakland Hills is iconic nationwide. Well, around the world, Oakland Hills is iconic. And it will be so good to have them back and able to do all the things they do, including welcoming some of the biggest golf tournaments ever. So that's what we're hoping for. Anything else?
Looks like April. The new clubhouse opens to members for brunch on April 5th.
Oh, that's
so right around the corner.
Better, yeah, April 5th, yeah. Okay, excellent. Anything else? I don't think there's anything else. Are we missing anything? I can't think.
No, I think that's a good place to leave it. Like you said, relentlessly positive.
Yeah, let's do that. As we continue, Focus with Paul W. Smith and the team, Mike Parsons, Danielle Mason, Rich Luzinski, and you. Yes, you, our listeners, are a very important part of this team, and it's why we do what we do on WJR at 116. Well, the March Madness is here. The 2026 NCAA men's basketball tournament tipping off today. Big dance. First game of the day is underway as number 8 seeded Ohio State facing off against number 9 TCU. We might get an update on that. What we really care about is number 3 seed Michigan State playing or making its 28th straight trip to the NCAA tournament under the great head coach Tom Izzo. And they'll be playing number 14 seed North Dakota today on WJR broadcast time 3 p.m., tip-off apparently at 4:05. All of this a part of the first round of the NCAA tournament East Region at KeyBank Center. Nick Fardella joins us. He is WJR's MSU Sports Digital Reporter. Here to talk about today's game and more. Nick, welcome.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate you having me be on.
Well, it's our pleasure having you on. What do you think of today's game?
I think Michigan State's going to get it done. North Dakota State, they're a really small team. They don't have anyone above 6'11", so that's going to have a huge advantage for Michigan State with Carson Cooper and Jackson Culler. Everyone knows they want to push the pace and get the ball in the paint, and I think North Dakota State not having anyone that tall is going to be a huge advantage for us to get our offense going early.
Well, here's hoping, and I don't think after going through the Big Ten tournament like both of our teams, Michigan State and Michigan, nobody's going to be cocky. Nobody's going to say, "Well, we can beat North Dakota, no problem." You better not go into any of those games feeling that way. That's how upsets happen. The winner of today's game will advance to play the winner of the game between number 6 seed Louisville and number 11 seed South Florida come Saturday, March 21st. And you look at Tom Izzo, making his 28th straight appearance in the NCAA tournament. That's got to be very close to being, maybe the longest streak?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he does have the longest active streak as an active head coach. So, I mean, that streak's just going to continue on growing, and that does pose an advantage for Michigan State to make a deep run here because he's been there so many times, and he knows how to win in March.
He sure does, and I'm hoping and praying for him. They say that it is the longest streak in Division I men's basketball history, ranking ahead of Gonzaga's Mark Few with 26. We're talking, as you pointed out, active. And then the 28 tournament appearances ranks tied for fifth most of all time and are second among active coaches behind only Rick Barnes, who has had 30, but at Tennessee, Texas, Clemson, and Providence. Now, Michigan State making its 39th appearance in the NCAA tournament with a record of 76-37 in its previous 38 tournaments. What else do we know besides the fact that they're they're short? I like that. About this North Dakota State team, what are their strengths? We know their weakness now.
They play at a really slow pace. They're bottom half of the country in pace and tempo, so they want to grind you out on defense and control the clock when they're on offense and just work their sets to the late game and the shot clock. And Michigan State, when they lost in the tournament before, it has been when teams have dictated the pace of the tempo. So I think that's going to be the key to the area. Michigan State wants to run, but North Dakota State wants to slow the game down. Whoever wins that battle is going to win this game.
Nick Fardella, WJR's MSU Sports digital reporter. I mentioned a moment ago both Michigan State and Michigan had, in the end, not the outcomes they would have liked in the Big Ten tournament. Do you think that that's going to be tough to bounce back from, or do you think that's going to be what really motivates both teams?
I think it's going to motivate them. I think, obviously, you want to win your conference tournament, but if you lose, it's not end-all, be-all, because you still, if you're going to clinch March Madness, which both Michigan and Michigan State did, they're going to play in March Madness. But I think they lost early. Both of them didn't have the outcomes they wanted. I think they're going to have a chip on their shoulder, everyone doubting them that they can't win, and that's going to prove dividends in the tournament.
How possible is it we're going to see a Michigan State-Michigan rematch in this thing?
It would only happen if both teams make the finals, which I think very well could happen. Michigan State, I think they're going to get out of this week and make it to the Sweet 16, and UConn is very vulnerable right now, and so is Duke with the injury. So Michigan State can easily make the Final Four, and Michigan is so good. I mean, they have a free shot to Elite Eight, in my opinion, and I think they're going to make the Final Four also. So there is a chance that both teams make the national championship game and play each other for a third time, and I think that would be absolute cinema.
All right, Nick, and since we are the voice of Michigan State on this great radio station, who do you say needs to have a good tournament for Michigan State to have a real run?
I think Jordan Scott. I think Jeremy Fears is going to do what he does and get 15 points, around 10 assists. I think Jackson Kohler is going to do what he does. But I think for us to take that next step is we're going to need guys like Jordan Scott to keep on hitting his threes and play good defense. Jordan Scott struggled in the Big Ten tournament against UCLA, and that's kind of why we lost. His defense rotation just weren't there when he has been all season. But if he's playing his A game, I think we can go very far.
Quick prediction on how far Michigan State will go, or even how far Michigan will go?
In my bracket that I did, I have Michigan State losing to Duke in the Elite Eight. But I do see us winning that game just because Duke has injury problems with their starting point guard. And for Michigan, I think they're going to make the Final Four. And if you make the Final Four, anything could happen at that point.
Nick Fardella, thank you, sir. WJR's MSU Sports Digital Reporter. We'll look forward to your reports throughout the next several days. Thanks, Nick.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure. 129 at WJR. We also got to spend a little time with Patrick Anderson, founder and CEO of Anderson Economic Group. Thanks for coming to the St. Patrick's Day party. It was crazy, but we got to say hi. Now we get a little more information that we need. Nice to have you here, Patrick.
Thank you, Paul W., and that was a great time on St. Patrick's Day.
Well, it was nice to see such a great mix of people. It wasn't all Democrats or all Republicans. It was a great mix of everybody. And we really appreciated it and appreciated you taking time out to be there. Now, Yesterday, the Federal Reserve voted to hold its key interest rate steady as policymakers navigate their way through higher-than-expected inflation readings, mixed signs on the labor market, and, of course, the war. What do you think's going on here, and how do you think they're doing? The Fed.
I don't think the Fed had any choice here. They had to do essentially a stay the course. What's happening with monetary policy now, right now, is a second or third tier issue compared to what's happening in the world. The Fed knows that, and they just needed to just be steady for a while.
Are you buying the story that, yes, fuel prices are going to spike in the short term, but soon, presumably when the war ends, which should be soon, that the prices will come down and come down really far?
Of course I'm buying the story that prices are spiking, because they already have been spiking.
Right.
And getting ready today, we already had crude oil prices touch briefly $119 a barrel. That is definitely a spike, and we actually went back and looked. The episodes that we've looked at before, including 2022, 2011, 2008, and 1990, 1991 were all situations where there was embargo, invasion, something happening that dramatically affected oil supply. And you saw run-ups in prices that were similar to what we're seeing right now. So, yes, I think gasoline, diesel prices are already at $5. They're going to be going up, because that's what happens when you have invasions, embargoes, and wars affecting the supply of oil and the ability to ship it.
Especially with diesel prices going up, just like gas, and everything is in America is delivered eventually by truck, and the trucks generally run on diesel. Now, with the Federal Reserve opting to leave its benchmark interest rate alone at this point, I understand that the oil price is going up. I kind of thought that gold and silver might stay up or go up higher, but they tumbled too. What's that about?
I can't explain that. Of course, gold is historically something that people go to in times of uncertainty. And boy, do we have uncertainty now. It's not all of our making, but part of it is foreign policy initiatives by our country, where we're saying that the Iran threat is untenable. We can't afford it. It's not something for me to debate now, but there's a reason why we have so much uncertainty in the world, and we've got it. And of course that affects whether people are confident about hiring, confident about investing, confident about buying big ticket items like cars, or whether they want to go buy some gold and, you know, essentially put it under the proverbial mattress.
I am seeing also here that markets in Europe and Asia getting hit much harder than U.S. markets. Is that to be expected?
Yeah, the United States, and all you need to do is go to another country and you realize this. The United States is the most powerful country. It has the biggest economy. It's the most stable. It has, compared to almost anywhere in the world, more freedom. And we're insulated from a lot of what goes on in the rest of the world. A big success for the United States over the last 15 years has been becoming energy independent. I mean, I recall, as I know you do, Paul W., all these exaggerated worries about the world's running out of oil and where you have energy crisis all the time. The U.S. actually produces more oil than it consumes. We export energy. So we're not completely insulated, but compared to Europe, we're in a way better shape to go through an oil shock.
That is certainly good news. Patrick Anderson, founder, CEO of Anderson Economic Group, thanks for sharing your expertise. Once again, we so appreciate you.
All right. Take care, Paul W.
143 WJR. You're going to hear a lot of love that daily dose of Dietz. I'll talk with Kevin Dietz every day just before us and right after us, JR Afternoon with Ryan Ermani. And it's always a pleasure, even if it's twice in 1 week, of catching up with our friend Aron Levin, freelance journalist, born in Israel, served in the Israeli military, and is here right now to talk about what is going on, the very latest I know that Hegseth gave an update on the war, but I want to ask you about this, Jerome. First of all, welcome back. Nice to have you here.
Thank you very much for having me, Paul. It's good to be with you always.
There are lockdowns at U.S. bases, global security alert highlighting fears of potential Iranian retaliation against U.S. and everybody here on American soil. Some unidentified drones were spotted above the Washington Army base where Secretary of State Rubio and Defense Secretary Hegseth now reside for their own safety, raising some concern about their origin and intentions. Any thoughts?
Well, look, when you're in a war zone, you have to be careful. And I'm not sure. I was not aware that that Hegseth and Rubio were in the war zone. But when you're there, you have to be very, very careful because we're fighting a completely different kind of warfare than anyone has ever fought. Even 20 years ago, the use of drones, the use of cyber, the use of electronic warfare, the use of digital warfare, none of this really existed. So it's not unusual to encounter new types of threats, and I'm quite sure that the American military is going to do everything it can to protect not just Rubio and Hegseth, but all our personnel as much as possible.
Well, here's hoping that the Democrats get the bill passed that makes sure that DHS is paid, and that would mean the Coast Guard, that would mean TSA doing away with the long lines at the airports, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's not a political statement. That's just a realistic statement of what's going on right now. But do you believe that the United States might have underestimated the role drones are playing for Iran?
No, I don't. I really don't. In fact, I think, Paul, that the conflict is going much better for Israel and the United States than you're reading in the mass media. The mass media tends to focus on political intrigue in the United States and lots of speculation of what might not have been considered or what might have been done differently. But if you really just look at the raw numbers, and I've been fortunate recently, I can't talk too much about it, but I've been fortunate recently to be given a pretty much inside briefing of the numbers, the raw numbers of the number of drones that have been shot down, the number of ballistic missiles that have been shot down, the effectiveness of the air defense systems, the number of targets that have been taken out, the amount of intel that has come in from Iran. I mean, think about this. The targets that have been established, that have been found in Iran, the only possible way that the leadership of Iran's military and its secret police and some of these other groups could have been found and targeted is because there are lots and lots and lots of Iranians who are helping the United States and are helping Israel find these targets, identify them, and let them know that. And even though the internet has been taken down, it's pretty obvious that Skylink, Elon Musk's venture, has played some part in reestablishing connection with the outside world so that the military can find these targets. I think that Iran, it may take more weeks, it may take some months, but Iran is really on set back on its heels, and this war is going much, much better than you would think by reading the front page of the New York Times.
Well, reading the front page of the New York Times gives you only what the Democrats would like you to read and what the liberal media wants to let us know about.
Correct.
We've known that for a while. But Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth said today, I didn't see it, but maybe you did, Daron, in this final minute or so, the largest strike package yet in the Iran war being delivered today.
Well, we also know that some of these commanders in the Iranian military don't even want to fire missiles anymore because they know that the firings of these missiles tend to identify their location and they get struck so quickly that firing a missile is almost a death sentence for the squad that fires the missile.
Well, I'm afraid that they've caught on to that and they're firing single missiles from just single locations and move them around so that we spend all that time and money blasting that area when the missile that they already had fired, and that's how we found it, and there may not be anything else there, but I'm overthinking it.
Well, you are overthinking it because we have drones watching where they are, and they can't run away fast enough, believe me.
Okay. All right, Darone. God bless you. Thank you much.
Thank you.
Darone Levin. That's it for us. Stand by for Ryan Armani. Regards, Paul W. Smith.